Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio on the AT&T Hotline in just a moment. Real quick, though, an update on the WGR Golf Tournament, which will be July 9th. Marty Baron and Andrew Peters have been added. You can bid on them. Sal is one of those that's already been sold off. There's a buy now price. If you bid on one of us, it's a threesome with us. So, wait, that sounded weird. You get three golfers and Sal, or three golfers and Bulldog, as they've already been sold. You can also just buy foursomes for you and three friends, where you don't have anybody specifically with you. But Andrew Peters and Marty Baron just added to the golf tournament. I had a texter ask, is it best ball? It is not. It is a scramble. And scrambles are fun. Sal, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
How do you like scrambles? Have you ever played in a shamble, by the way?
But what's the scramble is the scramble and a best ball is the same thing, isn't it? No?
No. Best ball is everybody plays their own and you take the best score.
No, best ball is everybody shoots and you take the best ball where it lies and everybody shoots from there.
No, that's a scramble.
I think that most people, that I've only known that to be best ball, and every time I've played a best ball tournament, that's what happens. So I think people call it best ball when it's like that, even though it might be incorrect.
I think that's correct. I think people sometimes refer to it as best ball.
Yes.
But best ball actually is, like a two-person best ball, you play your own balls and take the lower score. So a four-person best balls, you play all your own balls and take the lowest score.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think the WGR tournament is then a scramble,
which is
often incorrectly referred to as a best ball.
That's right. We can educate everyone here. Do you know what
you're right about that. It does make more sense now, but and that's usually the way that you play things. But I'm excited. You know, I got sold in a matter of 3 hours and 12 minutes. So I think that's the record. I don't know, so I want to brag a little bit about that. But shortly after that, I believe you and Bulldog have both been sold.
Yes. Do you know what a shamble is? And have you ever played one?
No, I know what a shamtrocity is. No, I'm just kidding. What is a shamble?
A shamble is everybody hits their own drive, you pick the best drive, and then everyone plays their own ball in from there. So you do get your own you do get your own score, but you are always using the best drive on the hole. It's not often, I don't know that I've been in very many shambles, maybe one or two. It's not a consistently used format, but and one of the things you'll learn about it is if you're like me, if you think, man, if only I could hit the ball straight off the tee, I'd be much better. Turns out you're not. Your score does not drop as much as you think it necessarily would.
Oh, I totally get that. As I've gotten older, my golf game has progressed to the point where I totally have learned that, you know, it's way easier to play the smart play, and better, I should say, for your score, to just play the smart play. And oftentimes that's because your drive is just bad, even though you're not like OB or something like that. And instead of trying to, you know, hit it through trees, you just punch it out and you get a bogey and you're like, hey, I'm good.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're talking about. I've also played in a format where, and you probably have too, where you must take a certain number of hits from each player.
Yeah.
You can't, because if you're with some sort of ringer or somebody who's scratch and you're not that good, you just take that person's ball every time in a scramble. But you can't do that in the format where you have to take everybody's hit a certain number of times.
Right. They'll do it where you have to take a certain number of tee shots. Like each person, you have to use two tee shots. My stance on that is that tournaments shouldn't do it because people don't keep track and don't care. Generally,
if I'm in those,
you know, you get six holes in and you're like, what? Who's it with you? Screw it. And nobody really keeps track of that. So I'm usually against that. All right. On to business, Sal. Yesterday at minicamp, sounds like it was a very interesting day, especially from the quarterback position, because as Howard has been asking for, not only did we see Josh Allen with the ones, but you referenced that Nathan Peterman looked really good. So where do you want to begin? Which one of those two is the bigger story to you?
Well, I think Josh Allen playing with the ones is the bigger story because we've yet to see it. And I think that's what everybody's been clamoring for and waiting for. So I think, you know, that's number one. How each guy looks, I think, is kind of secondary to kind of where they're lining up on the rep chart. And of course, coaches will continue to remind you that it is just a rep chart. It is not a depth chart. But it is noteworthy that Josh Allen took snaps with the first team. He was, you know, I wrote 11 on 11. Then I read a couple of people say it was 9 on 9, other media members, and I guess I didn't pay attention enough to notice if it was only 9-on-9, but either way, it was against the starting defense. And he got six plays. The first four were all passes. The first four were shorter, and then he threw what I would say was his signature throw of the day, Jeremy, which is you had Kelvin Benjamin on a, you know, I don't know if I'd call it a fade route. He was kind of running downfield like a fade route, about 15 yards downfield. It turned out to be like a back shoulder throw. And I don't know if it was meant to be that way, but certainly was meant to be in the only spot that he could catch it because he's 6'5". He climbed the ladder, turned his body, came down with it. Perfect throw.
Man coverage?
That's exactly what you want to see.
Was it man coverage?
It looked like it was, and he was tight too. It was tight coverage. And you know, he went up, he turned his body to the inside, walled off the defender, climbed the ladder, grabbed it, and came down. And there was a lot of oohs going on right there. Like, that was a nice throw. I think clearly, Allen, to me, put it in that spot on purpose, and he knew that's what he wanted to do. Now, in the very next play, he tries to throw only maybe a 7 to 10 yard curl to Charles Clay, tight coverage in a window, couldn't get it there. In fact, Micah Hyde comes, jumps it, gets his hand in there, ricochets off a helmet, pops up in the air, and Tremaine Edmonds intercepts it, and that was how his session ended. But, okay, you know, I think, you know, that's a rookie mistake. But he did not look out of place. He looked competent. And look, his arm is cartoonish. It just is. And I had this analogy yesterday that I said to Josh Reed. We were standing there watching. I said, Josh has a younger son like I do. And I said, Josh, you know when you're playing baseball or catch with your young son and you kind of just toss him the ball overhand sometimes? You toss him the ball real soft with your wrist. You don't use your arm because you don't want to hurt the kid. He says, yeah. I go, that's when I watch Josh Allen, it seems like that's what he does. The difference is it goes 40 yards.
Yeah. Well, Sal, you're mentioning a couple things. The number one thing I've wanted out of the Bills' passing offense is a quarterback that you don't have to avoid any throws. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor had his strengths, but I know that there are things that the Bills really didn't do or that Tyrod didn't do. And, you know, the world doesn't live and die with a back shoulder throw, but that's something that is a lethal weapon in the passing game for a lot of really good passing offenses, and the Bills haven't really employed it. So, to me, granted, it's mini camp. What am I getting out of it? Whatever, I'm getting that if you've only got six throws and you're going to be evaluated for throwing picks, but you're willing to throw to a tightly covered receiver on a back shoulder throw, like that's to me, that's a step forward. That's something this offense has needed.
Totally right about that, especially when you know your personnel, right? You have a 6'5 guy in Kelvin Benjamin that you're throwing that to. You know, when he was drafted, one of the things that, you know, was brought up that I said on the air was, you know, if the Bills know that he's not going to be, let's say, super, you know, he's not going to be pinpoint accurate like Tom Brady, then they're going to just, you know, then they can load up more on some of the bigger receivers, guys with bigger wingspans, guys that you can maybe miss a little bit more, but they can still come down with it. And, you know, that's the kind of guy, Kelvin Benjamin, that you can do something like that with. You don't have to put it in the perfect spot, but if you have a guy like that, you could put it in a spot where only he can get it. And there's a difference there. You know, you're not throwing there to Julian Edelman, you know, in that situation. So I think, those guys, he has to know his personnel is what I'm saying. I think he did in that particular regard. We also don't know if he's being told, Jeremy, I don't know, for example, if he was being told. I don't think this is the case, but when we watch practice, he could be being told, I want you to throw to Charles Clay here on the curl. I know he might be covered. I want you to throw it to him. Maybe they want to see that throw. They want to see how he can kind of go and dictate that coverage and try to put it in that window. I don't think that's the case, but we always have to remember those things. What I think people would like, though, to hear, though, is that after that interception that he threw, where Tremaine Edmonds got up and got it, Josh Allen went right to the sideline, talked to Nathan Peterman. Then after that, he talked to Micah Hyde, and he said, How did you jump that so quickly? Micah Hyde basically said something to him about reading his eyes. And, you know, that's good that he went to Micah Hyde and asked him that. And hopefully it's something that he can take with him and improve on, you know, that he doesn't telegraph that next time.
Sal Capace on the AT&T hotline on Bill's minicamp. All right, so how about Peterman? It was a good day for him. Was it the best day you've seen from Bill's quarterback this entire offseason? Is it the best day you've seen, not in your life, but I mean, just how good was Peterman and how many reps did he have?
Well, he was the number one quarterback, you know, with the ones for the most time. Other than with Josh Allen getting his reps, it was pretty much all the Nathan Peterman show. And again, this goes back to the rotation that they've had throughout this, because it's really been Peterman, McCarron on a daily basis. We'll see today if it goes back to AJ McCarron. What I tweeted yesterday was he was dropping dimes out here, and people have had fun with that, but you get that, and I think most people understand the reference. And if you're talking about a quarterback, that means that he's really putting the ball in some really good spots. I mean, look at Nathan Peterman. I don't know if I'd say it was, you know, the best day I've seen overall as a quarterback. Maybe it was, but I will say he made three of the best throws I've seen throughout these OTAs and minicamps so far. I mean, he dropped them into buckets over top of defenders right into receivers' hands when there was not much room to do it. And ironically, I'll say, though, twice the receiver didn't come down with it. Once, Patrick DeMarco just flat out dropped it when I think he tried to turn to run. And the other one, the receiver didn't, I don't know who it was, he didn't really bring it in quick enough. So the defender who was close by just reached his hand and then, you know, poked the ball away a little bit. But Nathan looked good yesterday. And, you know, we've said from the beginning, you guys know this, I've been kind of telling everybody, don't sleep on him as the starting quarterback this year. And I know that people make jokes about it, and they've said there's no chance or anything. I don't know. I don't think he's going to be the starter week one. As I sit here and talk to you, I don't think I would put him number one in the WHOSDAC, but I will tell you, he is a legitimate option. If he keeps playing, if he does more of what he did yesterday, we're going to be talking about Nathan Peterman possibly starting week one at Baltimore.
Would you put him? You wouldn't put him as the favorite, though.
I wouldn't. I would still put AJ McCarron. I will not change on that until they go to camp and I see something. I need to see pads, real live action, what's going on there. I just think for me right now, I can't take what I see in these OTAs and mini camps and think that that changes anything about the plan at quarterback. The only thing that's really going to change as far as regular season plan is how they perform at training camp. And but I'll have it in the back of my mind. I'll be quicker to do it though, Jeremy. That's what I'll say. I'll be quicker to put Nathan Peterman ahead if I see these things, because now I'm going to put it all together, but I'm just not going to do that right now before we get to training camp.
How about the front seven of this team, Sal? I'm asking you this to set up a question about training camp, but does the front seven of this team look like the strength of this team?
No, the strength is the secondary.
Okay.
Yeah, the strength is secondary, but I think this defense can be really, really good, and that front seven, if they stay healthy, can really be I'm gonna say like one of the best in the league. I think they have some issues at linebacker still, but I think they'll be consistent. I think they'll be able to do more than they did last year. They'll be able to stop the run a lot better. They really concentrated on fixing the middle of their defense. That's why they signed Star Lotulelei. That's why they drafted Harrison Phillips. That's why they drafted Tremaine Edmonds. You think those are three really tremendous additions right there to go along with who they already have there. But they are a little thin at linebacker, and it kind of showed itself yesterday, Jeremy. I mean, Matt Milano has been out with, he's got a bit of a hamstring. So Ramon Humber is your starting weak side linebacker. And, you know, last year I thought Ramon Humber started off the year well, but kind of struggled as it went on. And then that's why Matt Milano took over for him. Lorenzo Alexander was double shifting yesterday. He was playing with the ones and the twos as your strong side backer. You know, behind those guys, you got Xavier Woodson-Luster and, you know, who, right? And then you have Deion Lacey, you have Tanner Vallejo. These are not names that inspire a lot of confidence at this point to say, if you have to go into a game with these guys as your starters, that you're going to feel good about it. So, I mean, they have to stay healthy there, because if you talk about Milano and Edmonds and Alexander, I think, you know, that's a pretty good linebacking core. Now, granted, you know, Lorenzo's not going to be the guy that's going to be running around covering people all the time, but you have good athleticism next to him. But beyond that, they have some concerns there. So I think that is the concern with the defense. Although overall, if they're healthy, I think the front seven can be good.
And I think when you talk about, the reason I asked about the front seven is, will we get to a point in training camp at any, it's tough to predict this, but I guess what I'm wondering, Sal, is will the defense, it always ends up ahead of the offense, right? That's the cliche we hear every year. Oh, defense ahead of the offense. What I'm wondering is, can the offense hold its own against this defense? If we think the defense is going to be pretty good and the offense is going to go through some struggles, you know, at training camp, you're going to want to make sure, you know how it works when you coach. Sometimes you play dummy defense because the offense does need to work. So how will the Bills balance that if their defense looks like it is a legitimate strong unit, the strength of the team, and you're trying to get Allen and Peterman and McCarron their appropriate reps, you think we'll ever see a spot where not the defense has to kind of lay off? And I guess, does that ever really happen?
Well, it did a couple of years ago. Remember, Rex Ryan had to do that, right? Because he said that the defense, I mean, he said he took Jerry Hughes out because he was, you know, wrecking the offense. And I think there were a couple of times where they felt the defense was so far ahead that, you know, they kind of either laid off or let him go against the second team or third team or something like that, if I remember. But sure, I mean, but you have to be careful doing that. You know, you want to get your guys. You need, it's not about us laying off on one side. It's about you stepping up and doing what you're supposed to be doing on the other side. But you go in with plans. Everything is so finely detailed. I'm quite sure that Sean McDermott would tell Leslie Frazier, you know, hey, for this particular series today, when we go 11 on 11, this is what I want you to do and how I want you to structure your defense. And while the offense does this, because I want to see how they react to this sort of defense. So I think you can kind of, you know, you can kind of stage it and you can kind of set it up. It doesn't mean those guys are backing off. It just means at least you're putting your offense in positions where you can see certain things the defense either is doing or is not doing. And like I said, if you ever really want to, you could have the offense go against, you know, the second unit if you think that, you know, they need that to kind of show, even for their own confidence, if that's the case. Look, the offense is, we've heard everybody. You had Deion Dawkins on this morning. I'm guessing he told you that, you know, there's a lot in this offense. You know, he told us that a couple weeks ago.
He said it's different. He almost seemed not quite speechless, but just like, I don't know how to say it, but it's just a lot different.
Yeah, and LeSean McCoy said the same thing yesterday. He said it's a lot. There's a lot of studying. He said there's a lot that goes into it. It's all about getting the right matchups, and that's a theme we're hearing over and over again. LeSean actually said something interesting yesterday when he was asked about the offense and what it looks like. He said, we'll look similar to the Patriots. He said, because that's where Daboll comes from. He's all about finding mismatches. He said, and he goes, I know they have Gronk. He goes, but if you watch them play, they're always trying to find the mismatch. And that's what we're trying to do. And he used an example of getting Charles Clay on a specific linebacker, if that's the case, or Kelvin Benjamin on a specific player. And that's what you're trying to do. So from that regard, that's kind of the philosophy of the offense. But every person we talk to says it's a detailed, in-depth offense. It has a lot of moving parts. It has a lot of, I'm not going to use the word complication because no one has said that yet. No one has said it's complicated. They've all just said it's very detailed and in-depth, and there's a lot there, and there's a lot of studying that goes involved
and
into it.
Maybe, Sal, you know, the linemen, I'm thinking about them here. I'm thinking about Deion Dawkins saying it's just different. Do linemen have a lot more to think about now than before? Because it's not the power versus the zone blocking. It's whatever that week requires. So it's almost like you might have to teach the offensive lineman and install every possibility, and each week it'll be a different group of plays that you'll be using.
Totally right. So this is how offensive systems normally work. Is as long as you stay true to a system, you have certain rules in that system. So no matter kind of what play you're running, you're always going to have certain rules that you follow, whether it's outside zone system, inside zone, whether it's, I don't know, if it's wing T or midline option or something like that, you're always going to have certain rules you follow. Now, you can deviate from those rules on certain things the defense does, but you always kind of try to stay true. As an offensive coordinator, you teach your players, this is your rule. When in doubt, stick to your rule. Well, if you go from one system to the other, and you're going from outside zone system to power and gap scheme and all this kind of stuff, well, you can't stick to your rules all the time because your rules are going to change on a weekly basis, as you point out. So yeah, I mean, that's why it gets a little different. You can't fall back on, oh, well, you know what? I kind of unsure who I block here. I'll just stick to my rule because that's not the same play as before. That's not what we did last week. So your rule would be totally different because these systems are completely different when you go through them and think about how each of them operate.
Sal Capaccio on the AT&T hotline. All right, Sal, anything specific you're going to watch for today?
Yesterday, I concentrated a lot on the offense and seeing who was, you know, rotating in with the first, you know, offensive line, the second offensive line, things like that. Today, I want to look a little bit more at the skill players. I did know that Robert Foster, and I noticed this, and I tweeted it, UDFA, an undrafted free agent wide receiver, was getting reps with the first team. I talked to him after, and even he says, like, you know, it's everybody's just getting reps, you know. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I do think it's noteworthy that, you know, Robert Foster was in on the first two plays. They gave him an end around. So I'm going to try and look at more of the skill position. I'm kind of one of the areas I haven't looked at enough, I don't think, is the running back rotation, you know, where that's going. Chris Ivory seems to be the number two guy. Travaris Cadet comes in. They do have Marcus Murphy. They have some guys back there. So, you know, how is that? And what is that rotation? So those are things that I'll be looking for today. I think a little bit more of the skill position players and how, you know, they're rotating in and out, because I've been looking at the line, and that pretty much hasn't changed, by the way. It's been the same offensive line, Ryan Groy back at center, Dukas and Miller at guard, Dawkins and Mills at tackle, and then the same second and third unit as last week as well, which I pointed out.
All right. Well, we'll be glued to the station for this afternoon when you appear with the guys this afternoon, and look for your work at WGR550.com.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Al.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.